The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah.
I represent Bahamian people. I from
Nassau, Bahamas, big up in town, bro. Boy, I from Dayton, bro. Bro, bro.
Right between West and Augusta, where them two roads meet, they call it Wilkinson Street. Manners and respect was like a sign blind check. It seems the ones that come in after quick to disrespect. You see, this life in the ghetto never easy. So many hungry days break till it grieve me. Boy, I doing the best I can, trying to turn my dollar to $100,000. I represent the ghetto people. I from
Nassau, Bahamas, big up in town.
Good night, Bahamas. And welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I'm your host, Valentino Braun, a.k.a. Scoochie Scrooge or Scroogey. Telephone numbers tonight on Guardian Radio are 323-6232-325-4316. 325-4259, and you can text us at 422-GR96, and also you can look us up on Cable Bahamas, and you can tune in and listen to a nice, wonderful show on Guardian Radio. I hope each and every one of you are enjoying yourself here tonight. I met a lady last week, Empress, let me see if I can remember her name, Garnell. Empress Garnell, I met her by Sticky a few days ago, and she was quite excited to meet me in person. I want to say the same to you. You made my whole day that particular night. Yes, it shows that people are really appreciate what you're doing to help influence the country to make some right decision, and that, you know, to them, they feel like they're talking on the radio when they talk about the different topics and solutions and what can we do to make the country a better place for us to enjoy this wonderful paradise that is here in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. Today's show, we're going to do a continuation of last week. I got a message from somebody concerning a very important matter. And sometimes it's good just to listen to see what persons have to say, because I've learned over the years to always have a dialogue and to always listen. I'm not particularly always right, but sometimes people can misinterpret what you're saying. But I just want to talk about some important matters so that we can see how gainful it is, some of the topics I talk about, and how it's beneficial as education, and how we can move forward with some of the solutions that I brought forth. Because over my journey, living in the inner city community, I have had a host of experience with so many different walks of criminals and different walks of criminality. You know, for me, I just was a straight up guy who loved violence. I was not one to be involved in armed robbery, rape, or none of the sort. That was not me. But I knew many guys. That was their field. But they would normally, you know, hang around and we would have discussions, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, we are all the same age and, you know, we living in the community. And I'd always try and say, man, dying the right way to go, you know, dying, what is it all about, you know, and et cetera. I'd do my best to try and persuade them otherwise, to try point them even in the positive direction. You know, I'd tell you, say, man, you don't need to go do that. I'd tell you, say, man, look, yeah, go grab some weed, go try sell some weed, or et cetera. You know, that better than grand robbing somebody, go raping somebody, you know, and the police won't be too hot for you, you know, if you keep yourself quiet. So things like that and suggestions I was giving to guys on the streets when I was on the streets, because some things, as a person involved with criminality, I didn't like certain elements of the criminality world, okay? A prime example, when Jeffrey Dahmer committed those crimes based on the evidence that was presented by the U.S. District Attorney and Attorney General in the United States of America, and they found overwhelming evidence And then they sentenced him to death. While he was getting ready to sentence to death, they had an ex-prisoner who was involved in an ex-murder. And when Joffrey Dahmer and him were in the same cell, you know, he killed Joffrey Dahmer, you know. Why? He probably didn't like how he was harming girls, you know. So that's just how it is in the criminal elements. That's why you have to be very careful when you're out on the streets doing particular crimes. So some guys who you're rolling with don't like the stuff you're doing, and they would stand up for it, you know, and many guys would. So I'm not that, I was that type when I was a part of that in person. And sometimes I talk, but I don't have a chance to explain because either call a call or I get off track, and I never really have the chance to explain. Well, before I get to the topic, I just want to give out a community announcement. Mount Olive Baptist Church and the Rotary Club of West Nassau presents the 33rd Annual Senior Citizen Christmas Party, Saturday the 10th of December 2022, from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. Meadows on Augusta Streets, Bainton. You know that C.B. Moss on his team, and he also has the Rotary Club of West Nassau will be in attendance. Team, we are being molded by your love. They'd have a carol service, they'd have delicious meals, good fellowship, and exciting gifts. I think they said they're going to have the Ramming Brothers, famous Bayman gospel singers, to also perform. At least they've been given their time for the past few years at the Bainton Senior Citizen Christmas Party, Saturday 10th of December. So all those who live in Bainton, Meadow Street and Augusta Street, Finneson Street, C.B. Moss is inviting each and every one of y'all grandparents and y'all mom to come out and have a wonderful meal at Meadow Street. Also, Pastor Dave will also be having a Thanksgiving meal. Let me see. No, that's not it. That's the wrong one. I'm sorry. But anyway, I'd give an announcement on that as the show begins. Let me find it first so I can get that out of the way. Okay. Okay, yes, this is now. Yes. Sorry about that. St. Paul's Baptist Church, Men's Department. Man Encounter Team. Man, it's enough. It's now or never. Saturday the 3rd of December 2022, 6 p.m. St. Paul's Baptist Church, Bernard Road, Fox Hill. Topics include why don't men listen? How to grow man ministry. Material rape for or against, equipping men to find their purpose. Man and crime, what is the solution? What is the solution? Helping young men to avoid the gang culture if men can get milk free. Why should he buy a cow? In attendance will be Pastor Donnie Major, Reverend Eugene Patton, Reverend Norman Bedford, Reverend Dr. Anthony Simpson, Reverend Glendale Miller, Reverend Harrison Thompson, Elder David Williams, Director of Hurting Man Ministry, and Attorney Viva Delavaux, Man President of the St. Paul's Baptist Church, and Pastor Carol Ramming. Senior Pastor at St. Paul's, where the event is being held. So we have men who are trying to focus on men, and we need to put all our attention to refocusing the mindset of men and females in the country. But it's good to see that men are sticking up, because we sure see the women, you know, they're getting their bill passed. Equality, as you can see, and they're getting the big boost. We are seeing the Speaker of the House, Speaker of the Senate. We are seeing tremendous growth in the development of women in the Bahamas. So men, look like we're getting left behind. So we can't get left behind. These ladies are really, really doing a wonderful job, and they are fighting for equality. All right? So, we are losing the battle, so we need to focus. And that's why the prison reform is so important. And before I begin that topic, let me begin where I left off last week so we can get a good understanding. The Minister of National Security, Honorable Vian Munro, is spearheading, along with the Acting Commissioner of the prison, Mr. Clare, on programs from the previous administration and this administration. This administration is accelerating. You know, we don't want to get in which government. You know, we want to see which government execute on the behalf of the Bahamian people. We all know that other government left things in place, and it's continuous. So some of the plans are from previous governments, but it does not make any difference because government is government. When you get pension, it says Commonwealth of the Bahamas. It does not say PLP, or it does not say FNM, okay? So, yes. Yeah, the minister stated that, let me see if I can find the note, that I was way off when I said 91 or 92%. It stated here that 98% of inmate duties are back in the public, according to the Minister of National Security. So this is the reason why we should focus on rehabilitation. Over the last 40, 50 years, we used to call it Fox Hill Prison. But it's supposed to be a rehabilitation institute, okay? But we have failed to make it a rehabilitation institute. It was just there for punishment. And many of us as citizens, we were against the inmates. You know, you do the crime, you spend the time, which I totally agree of how everyone feel about that. I totally agree. At the same time, 98% will be released back in the public. So if they're not properly rehabilitated, we'd see repeated offenders. And it's not the fault of the person second stunt at being incarcerated. It probably because we probably didn't have the right correctional programs in place to monitor and to see, you know, if this person is doing a five-year stretch, see what the crime that he or she committed, and say, you know what, let's check their background history and see what led to this person making this decision against an ex-Bahamian, which in turn costs thousands of dollars of the court time, hurts the victim up, you know. It hurts the victim because you can excruciate pain, you can excruciate death, you can excruciate, you know, suffering, you know, and loss of life, special to that family and to, you know, that community. And the person commit that. So let's fast track and say, you know, some of the notes I want to go back to, and then I'm going to get to the topic. Tennille Burrows with the RISE organization. They just recently was having an interview, and they were speaking on the fact that teenagers charged with the murder of a 13-year-old boy being remanded to the Simpson Pen for boys. The Coalition of Child Advocates, you know, COCA, you know, RISE concern for the residents of the juvenile correctional facilities. So we have some kids up there the same age, or 14 or et cetera, but they are different. Means they are high risk, means they are very violent and cannot be controlled. And they are put in an environment where you have kids who are less violent and less prone. So you have a situation where you have some that are uncontrollable and some that are controllable. Set out who are uncontrollable. Sometimes when they are uncontrollable, they are removed from the Sinsen pen and put into the juvenile facility at Her Majesty's, which is now called the Bahamas Correctional Institute. Okay? And if you listen, the juvenile unit houses about 14 juvenile inmates at the facility. The prison now is trying to revamp our unit based on the survey done by the American Correctional Association here in the Bahamas. They did a structural assessment at the prison, and they said that it was unacceptable. In return, the government of the Bahamas has decided to put measures into place and do programs and upgrade the prison infrastructure. And they want to increase the remand center at the juvenile unit to 25 inmates. Not only that, they also, the prison corrections officers will be trained by the American Correctional Association team, and also be able to teach the juvenile offenders about rehabilitation and et cetera. So this is a step in the right direction, okay? And, okay. So I'm just saying that to say, we have 13-year-olds who are uncontrollable, who are put in the Sinsen pen, but they're so uncontrollable that they are removed from the Sinsen pen and put in juvenile facilities, okay? So we're going to see what this call has been on the line for a few minutes. So we're going to take this one call, but I want to really get back to my topic and finish off my conversation from last week. So go ahead, caller. You're on Inside Inner City.
Yes, sir. Good evening to all.
Good evening to you.
You know, we have a prison system, right, that needs a whole lot of repair. You know, just this week, there was talk about putting air conditioning in the prison, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you've been in prison. You know, I've been around that prison. You know, we have a thing called Big Jail, with no plumbing. You know, and Big Jail house a whole lot of prison. You know, people that go in there, they go in there, they go in there. Many of them go in there without jobs. You know, they leave society that can't, they not afford the opportunity to get good paying jobs. Many of them don't have any trade. They go in prison and very few of them come out. There's very few opportunities for prisoners to come out there with trade. There's only few jobs in the prison workshop.
Mm-hmm. As I continue to show, I'd use some what they're doing now to facilitate the needs of the inmates.
Right.
When you're finished.
Right. So in other words, they need, drastic measures need to be taken.
They are doing, like I said, go ahead.
You know, and see, this is a system we have in this. That's not addressing the people who never go to prison that is having issues outside of that prison. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? People that don't do the crime, that have issues. You see, we have a system where we don't want to tax the rich. You see, to take care of the social responsibility of the government, we continue to tax the poor. You know, we need to go and study Franklin Delano Roosevelt, FDR, President
okay.
FDR from the United States,
yeah,
the New Deal.
Yeah, but anyway,
there's no way
I know,
that government can do its public duty. Even public jobs, you know, that's necessary. That the public money, that jobs that you call for, that needs to be spent, you know, that employ these at-risk people, these poor people, you know, that's done by taxing rich people. You know, income tax alone. You know, we have people in the society who wants to make some of them 100 times. Or 30 times the amount of the lowest paying worker.
Yeah, but I agree with you. But I want to really get back to this topic before I go on my face direction of taxing the rich. I think
the prison, you know, you're talking about the prison. The prison's got issues, and, you know, where's the money coming? That's a public issue.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Where's the money coming from? We need to adjust what we need to adjust.
I agree.
You see? Until we address where the money's coming from, where it should be coming from. See, we in this country, we are a conservative country, and that's not a good thing. All of our governments are conservative. All of our politicians are conservative, and, you know, there's no hope for us.
Yeah.
You know, but there's anyway, no hope.
Thank you very much. You made some great points. Okay. Yeah. And I understand where the caller is coming from, but we must understand something. It takes people who have a voice to really make a difference, you know, besides politics. You know, you were saying tax the rich, you know. The politicians, the PLP and FNM, who are the government of the country, you know, they're all black people. Who in black are white behemoths, and all of them are behemoths, right? So they get in power. So if they're not doing it, then you understand what I'm saying to you? So we, that there is a stalemate, because if we have the two political major parties, and if they're not coming taxing the rich, you know, they come in, and they're not taxing rich. Maybe they are taxing the rich, it's just that we're not seeing it the way we want to see it. But we see the major investments coming in the country now, and maybe if we could get some of this investment to spend to the prison, like the caller is saying, because I'm seeing here, Mr. Clare, he's talking like $2 million for a whole renovation to the prison. And he said that, and that's what the caller is referring to, you know, even though they're doing these programs. And I think he was knocking a nail on the head, because I was getting to that, you know. And I think we're talking about $2 million for a new maximum security that it houses 4 inmates in the cell. Currently, right now, 8 inmates are cramped in running water, and there's a water problem like the caller referred to. And yes, they're making an upgrade, but $2 million, you know, think about it. You know, we have major investments in the major family island, Freeport, into the billion. You know, national problems on the family islands, and $500 million, you know. Exomas, billions, you know, major investments. And yet still, you know, we spend about how much a week on the inmate? I think it's $10,000 a month or something like that. I had the notes, but I left them home because I was in such a rush. And it's crazy, you know. You know, we need to say, you know, we're serious. We got these prison officials. You know, it's reported that last week, I said 600 phones were confiscated at the prison. Listening to the report after I said the report. So y'all get some intelligence report last week, because as you can see, it was in the newspaper this week. They brought it down to about 400 or more. So you probably say it's around the same thing. They talk about the contraband. The acting commissioner, Mr. Clare, he didn't give an estimate. He didn't have an estimate. I think he had an estimate, but it was very, very a lot. So he didn't want to tell the general public that how many marijuana or fine or cocaine was found in the prison. You know, he didn't want to talk about that. So I could guess it was a large amount found in the prison, and et cetera. You know, when we are talking about the prison, I think we should really say, you know what, $2 million for renovation. Yes, this is very important about the renovations. Not to explain it as the show goes on. But let's say, you know, if the prison, according to Mr. Clare, who has been working at the prison over 20-something years or 30-something years, so he knows the prison. I talked to him personally. I asked him some questions at the Ministry of National Security, and he gave me some answers that I knew were happening in the prison, and he gave a frank answer back, and I knew he's telling the truth. So I know that he's an honest person. So I feel he's really concerned about the inmates at the prison, knowing that 98% are coming back in society. And we have to prepare them back for reentry in society. Else, we're going to have a lot of more. So, you know, we as a country need to say, as a government, you know, we're going to say, hey, we need $2 million, right? Let's say, out of the revenues and on business deals and investments that has been coming to the Bahamas in the last year, which the PLP government is doing an extremely awesome job in the billions. Why not? They'll say, you know what? They need $2 million to do the upgrades. Let's put an extra $2 million there just to make sure that they have everything and to pay the inmates who are doing the job. Because according to what the acting commissioner of the prison is stating, he's saying that the prison officers and the prisoners are doing this, you know, at the prison, you know. And, you know, now's the time that they need the funds now, because they kind of use up the resources and they need the funds to carry out in the next step. So if we have prisoners and prison officials, which in, if we're so concerned about the 98% of inmates coming out of prison, and some, like I said, you know, come out with a mentality that they're not properly rehabilitated. In fact, they're going into the community that is not fit for them because there are no jobs in the community. You know, we as people who are law-abiding citizens can't find work in the country right now, which the government is doing its best to try and find ways of bringing them employment with small business and et cetera. We're looking at an estimated of 6 million tourist times next year, closest, you know, 4.7 this year. And then they say by next year, about 6 million, you know. We have not invested in maritime. There are about 800 different fields of maritime. You know, we have not invested in the fishing industry in the country. We have not invested even in the tourism industry that is here in Arsenal province. So we have a serious problem unless we could add those things to the school curricular system and in the communities, with, to the community centers and et cetera, you know, in maritime and, like I said, small business, and then we could get kids in the maritime and then with the tourism industry. You know, I think the One Family, the Saxon, and all the Junkanoo groups are really doing the members a disservice. And here's why I'm saying that. The leaders who are of this particular organization, you know, they have a great opportunity. They don't know what they have. They have Junkanoo. Tourists want to see Junkanoo. In these communities where these Junkanoo sharks are, you think in these communities shut up should be unemployed? Let me give you a prime example, and then I'm going back to the topic. Mason Addition, for example, is the Saxon's way. They have many different sharks, and all of these guys are talented, building costumes, building Junkanoo doors, and et cetera. Why isn't it we have about 500 guys who are talented selling there out of Fox and Saxon's way? You know? You understand what I'm saying? Same thing with One Family. So when the tourist comes to Saxon V, which is right down, they come down the 66 steps, you have different walks of art and craft and wood carving along the side of the streets and your yard. So we ain't even understand Junkanoo, and that's tourism. See, me, my mind think, my mind open, you know? And that's how we could bring unemployment down in the country. Mason Addition, Bantan, and Grandstand, we're closest to Bay Street. And if we could just harness the tourists to come about 100 steps, and we could make that community a safe place, we'd get ahead of our crime problem and change the mindset of our youth, because we'd be involved in maritime, we'd be involved in farming, we'd be involved in fishing. But the most important, we'd be able to make American money right in our communities at our doorsteps. You just have to clean up your community. Make sure the community is safe. Make sure there is no dialect. If you don't have no insect, if you're selling food, clean the place right up and you work together and do not row and fight one another. Two different walks of art and craft, people. It's close to, in 2017, 2016, we had 7 million visitors visit our shores. If we could harness some of that money to come over in the inner city community, do you think we'd have some of these problems we face today? All these social problems, like abuse and all this stuff, will eventually deal with itself because I am able to have a living. I don't need to stay in the house. I'm a young kid. If I'm getting abused at home, I sell coconut and I make up to $50 to $100 a day, right? I have people who I could talk to. So eventually, I could go someplace else. Or if I'm home with my husband, I mean with my wife, and she's treating me bad, but we have income, we have a business, we can make decisions. You know, it's just the way that, you understand? So that's all I'm saying. Maritime, agriculture, fishing industry, and the tourism sector. There are so many different tourism, how should I put it? There's so many. You got snorkeling. You got tours. You got Airbnb. You get restaurants. You get nail technician. hair technicians, you know, massage. There's so many things we can do to create honest opportunities in our community, but we have to think out the box. I just wanted to say that and get ahead of the problem. Okay, now let me get back to the topic. Yeah, last week I mentioned two poisons in particular. I mentioned gold. I mentioned one, Eduardo Ferguson, who known as Kofi Goodman. Two of these young men have had high prolific cases in the country over the course of their careers. And if you watch the news, this is not something I saw. This is what everyone else saw. And I'm not the one who brought none of these guys guilty. It was the jury. It was the police who did the investigation. It was the jury. I want to say to me, when they said guys are monsters, I wasn't referring to these two young men in particular. I was referring to the fact that when we talk about the 13-year-old and juvenile facility that I was talking about, and they're uncontrollable at the age of 13 at the juvenile facility and has to be transported to the prison because they are unruly. If we're not following the trend and monitoring these young men, and we allow them to go through the system, eventually they will be uncontrollable. And when they hit the prison, and they, the Minister of National Security stated 98% will be released back in society, and then they go back in these communities. And because of the psychology effects, not knowing that these poisons probably have post-traumatic stress or they have mental issues. So my reference when I say Eduardo Ferguson or Goodman or Timothy Cole, I mean that if we follow their careers at that age, you would see that these guys actually had a mental health issue, but was never diagnosed because at that particular time, we were not in those kind of research. We were just in the punishment, and we add insult to injury. And when we send them to prison, right, they get hardened mitigation measures put in place, and they get hardened up there, you know? And like I said, I remember my friend, Eduardo Ferguson. He changed his name to Kofi Goodman. He and I were good friends at D.W. Davis, along with many of our classmates at school. Me and him were close. I used to walk with him from D.W. Davis in Bientan to where he lived. And me and him were good. So when I was referring to him, and I said, you know, Eduardo Ferguson, I was referring to him in our relationship. I was using him as an example that we always asking why someone would commit these crimes. Like I said, I didn't brought him guilty. The police did the investigation, and the jury convicted him. And I only go by what everyone said, but I know him personally, and to me, he was a good friend to me. And we were in school, and this was like in 1989, 1991 at D.W. Davis. And there was some new students came to D.W. Davis from CC Sweden and TG Global, which they closed down. And they just made Donald Lewis a senior high school, adding the 10th and 11th and 12th grade. We just had a new complex, and we were in the 9th and 10th grade. And I think Eduardo came from CC, and we became good friends. And then, like, in a year or so, if I'm correct, I can remember him getting locked up on a particular matter. And then we listened further. He got about, I think I'm correct, he got about 2-3 years. Now, we're all troubled young men now. We're all similar. You know, now we're getting in that 14, 15, we now, testosterone's are running high, and we don't have that proper guidance. Now, these things would lead to guys becoming monsters. And the programs that we're talking about is how we implement them to stop them from becoming a monster. That's why I talk about empowerment, about the business and Mason Edition, and grandstand and dealing with the maritime, et cetera. If you have that going on at the age of 3, 4, 5, 6, because junking starts early. So ain't no excuse. And we have the customers, which we call them tourists, but they're customers. And they could come over here and they could buy from those kids on the side of the road. Just like the kids themselves can apps, the kids them could be doing junking stuff. The junking group just need to make Ardencroft and PTY are part of their curricular year-round and have these individuals with their talent selling these stuff. And when the tourists come through Mason Edition or in Grandstand, which I'm building my own plan the same way, but I'm just giving ideas because people who they can listen to and think about it. And it makes sense. This makes sense. Listen, there's no one in the world can't say this can't work. There's not one person on this phone could call in here and tell me this can't work. Not one person can't tell me it makes sense, because it makes plenty sense. It makes plenty sense, more sense than you're going to hear in your whole entire life when it comes to, say, how we could create employment in this country and get employment completely down, because the money would trickle down. The money would make in Grandstand and Beantown would start to trickle down, and some people might want to start it down in their community, but first of all, you got to get proper training on money management, get training on how to act with customers, and how to act with yourself, because you can't have two person rowing in front of tourists when they come over nothing, man. That one tourist wouldn't make a difference. You have 700 coming to the Nassau, no problem. So why are you going to argue with who this and who that? You know, that's us. Until we could get that black crab syndrome out, then you'll be a part of the association. But if you was a person who niggly and like rowing petty, you don't need to be part of it unless you're going to change your mindset and understand that this is a team effort. And if you insult, then you make it bad for all us. And that's the bottom line. Yeah, so let me finish get back to my friend, Mr. Ferguson. And then, you know, because like I tell you, he was my friend. And he, you know, and he had money. You know, he had a big-time brother. His brother died on the highway. I think it was Harry. I could always remember him. We used to walk them. I always remember his brother died. And he, you know, saddened by it. Because I tell you, he was a good friend of mine. And then, like, he went to prison. And when he went to prison, there was rumors saying that he got a gang and assaulted at the prison. And this news came to us because we were still in school. And then we were on the streets also. We're not just school kids. At our age of 13, 14, 15, we were seasoned. You know, we were living on the streets. We were out late, 10, 11, 12 o'clock. You know, most of us ain't had no mother or father who was dictating us. So we were more like taking care of ourselves in the 90s. Most of our parents were on drugs and et cetera. So, you know, and yeah. And then, you know, a few years later, I saw him by on East Street, on Nassau Street, and he looked at me. And he said, "Schoolmate, you remember me?" Like I said, he was always my good friend, you know. And then when I listened, you know, he was accused of the little guy named now, little Marco Archer. And then he was questioned, and then after a while he was charged like everyone saw. And to me, you know, it was hard for me, but I understand the circumstances, you know, and he was convicted, and then he got appeal, and then he went and again, and now, you know, so I don't want to make it bad for him, you know, if he got caught or et cetera. So I'm just saying that in the sense. I just was saying, like, you know, how from 13, going to prison, how people change without the proper rehabilitation. And all we're doing, all we're doing is making people worse. Worse that when they come back out, they would harm more innocent people. Because they said, yeah, 98% will come back out. And they go back in these communities, which, you know, ain't fit for them. So they go to the darkest spots, and they control it until their time is done. Until then, they wreak havoc. So we need to have these programs in place with the juveniles and et cetera. And then let me talk on my friend, Timothy Cole. I know Timothy Cole. Timothy Cole from Grandstand, where I'm from, Lewis Street, A Street, and Taylor Street. I know Timothy Cole from when I was a little boy. Timothy Cole asked me about 4 or 5 years. Until he was always an achievous young guy, you know? He always was roaming the streets, you know? He's always up and down, you know? He's seeing his patch in his head. But he was always a good friend to me, you know? And he was very serious, you know? And he went to prison at Boys too. And like what they are facing now, like that was like 40 years ago or 35 years ago with the 14 juveniles, you know? And they say some, you know, how's that though? Simpson Penn, uncontrollable. He was like that also. the family structure was done messed up because, you know, it was a drug era. And the police, their job was just to apprehend. And the court system was just to persecute. But in there was nothing in there to say, let's find out what the problem is. You know, why is these guys coming back? You know, back and back and back. But there was no diagnostic. Just recently, you know, I've had people talk about this, about mental health and post-traumatic stress disorder, which we're referring to as mental illness. Now we're making that a part of our curricular system now, knowing that a lot of persons has it, but it was never diagnosed. So many of these persons had these problems. Many of the persons on the streets now who are not even in the criminal world have mental health issues, you know, and they need to have someone to talk to, you know, have some guidance. So the system was never built up on that. And let me go back to Timothy Gold. And Timothy Gold was always a rebel. And when I was one of the leaders of the gang, you know, and he would hang with us, he never would disrespect me or none of the guys. He would just hang there. And he was a down there person. He never bothered with no one in the community. You know, it was never like that. But outside the community, based on the charges, when I read the newspaper, and I say knowing him, like I say, I never see with my own eyes. I know how serious he is as an individual. When he on the street, you mess with him, that's it. You could forget about it. Either you kill him or he get killed from the police. It's all out war. That's just how it is. Okay? And, you know, he just recently was convicted for Inspector Batch at the Royal Bombers Police Force. And I'm saying condolences to Inspector Batch family because, you know, I'm calling a name and it brings up memory. And I don't want to use no excuses for nobody who was harmed them because, you know, no, on their side, you know, you never know what Batch meant to them. You know, his daughter was there. His family is there. And, you know, he's a part of a maternity. So I have to be respectful to both parties. But to both parties, if I'm using name on both sides, I'm using it for example for us to follow so that we could see iron deficiencies and correct. They're making some corrections now based on the prison for overall and parole, the maximum security, the new juvenile facility to deal with that, the uncontrollable 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds who would be sent to prison. They're making sure that the American Correctional Association will be training the prison officers and et cetera, and in turn training the inmates on how to be reintegrated back in society. Yeah, and Timothy Cole, you know, he's listening right now, and Elvado. And like I said, when I went to prison, I never spent no long time in prison. People listen to me. I was very smart, and like I said, I was only a violent person. So I picked my fights. I would never go at no one randomly. If you come at me, I go at you, and I could care less, all right? I don't go rob nobody. I stay in my own corner. I don't rape nobody. I don't steal from nobody. Just how it was around the country. And everyone would try coming to space and take advantage of you, just that I was rough and tough, because everyone else was rough and tough. So what else you want to do? You play soft, that was it. Okay, so you had to stand up for your rights, okay? I was going to Donald Lewis. That was rebelling Raiders. I was living in Grandstand. Either I become a Raiders or I don't go to school. I decide to go to school. That's how I get involved with gang. So I say, you know, guys, stopping me from going to school to get my education. And I continue going to Donald Lewis till 11th grade. Till I get transferred after I go in the big fight in 11th grade. And then Mr. Andrews and Mr. Rowe transfer me from Donald Lewis to C.R. Walker. And I graduated in 1982 at C.R. Walker. Yeah, and Timothy Cole, like I said, I was very smart. I spent about 3 weeks. When I first reached the prison, a message was sent to me from Timothy Cole. And he said, Big bro. Bought out because, you know, everyone respect me because I was one of the leaders. And he was in prison. And he was Jordan bought out because he's from the area. And he then was a boss. And he said, you know what? I can make sure you straight, man. Say, listen to that prison officer. Go where he tell you to go and go with him. And he was able to put me in a safe environment. Not that I was scared, people. It's just that, you know, I had a lot of enemies. A lot. I talking hundreds of enemies. I ain't talking no one, two guys. I was a terrorist. I had all kind of enemies, all type. And when I went to prison, that was everyone's chance. You know, because the prison was more gun dogs and raiders than border boys, because border boys was more elusive. You know, we wasn't getting charged no offenses because guys would not report on us because they don't get us so bad. So they never talk about the stuff. What do you do to them? Just for them to catch us in poison. That's how it was back in the 90s, you know? All the going to the police and pimping and talking to one another. That wasn't around in the 90s. That come around in 2000, the 2000 babies. Yeah, so Timothy would look out for me. You need anything? And anytime you say, don't use the Bartram, Scoochie. Say, if you use the Bartram, I could always remember this. Say, if you use the Bartram, this was going on when I went to prison. Say, if you use the Bartram, them guys can gang you. So he told me, say, stand in front of Benji cell. Benji is Samuel Mouche McKenzie, our uncle. He's now deceased. Both of them now deceased. And he was a big time, you know, inmate at the prison. Famous on the streets. And he told me to stand in front of the cell. And I got to always remember this. A guy came and he told me, say, boy, look here. Say, you go, come here, look here. What you dealing with, man? Say, man, the prison officer say, go use the bathroom. So he come to me, you know? Tell me, say, I gotta use the bathroom. So, you know, I just look at him because I stand up in the front of the cell and he going back bopping. So he see that I'm awake, so he come back next 3 minutes. My boy, say, you hear what they say? Say, man, the prison officer say, go use the bathroom. So Timothy Cole already tell me what's gonna happen, because I didn't see all the guys in Wodo get the chuckle. You know, I tell you, rebellions, gun dogs, jail full. Everyone would get me. And I grabbed the guy when he come the second time, and I choke him out in front of the prison officers. I tell you, excuse me for saying this, I choke him until the foam start coming anymore. Yeah, so the prison officers, them, jump on me. And they say, "Oh boy, who you is, man? You just reaching here? And all these niggas." Then I get always remember this. My enemy was in prison. All my enemies. Then on the radio side, I always remember Kelsey Lundy. His name is actually Scrooge. Like I say, he's the original Scrooge. And like I say, I call his name because all this is reference to a good dialogue. And he was the leader of the Raiders at that time. Him and Franz Pascal, who about a month prior fired 14 shots at me and shoot my friend, my cousin, and my friend, chicken in his back. And Franz was in prison for that shooting. Kelsey, a.k.a. Scrooge, he has a wonderful restaurant on East Street. Him and his wife, Melissa. You could pass any time and have a wonderful time. Nice food, nice atmosphere. You can go and chill at Ross Corner. It's a wonderful, wonderful location. Nice guy. You know, so after I choked the guy, they see I mean business. So when the prison officer loosed me, you know, the whole cool gun dogs and rebellions try to crowd me. So I tell them, say, y'all know where I go. I say, y'all get me in here. But they say, once I get out of jail, y'all know what time it is. And they know I mean business just as well as they mean business too. But they know me personally as a person mean business. You know, I was never easy. Anyone can tell you that who listened to me and know me, know I was never easy. I wasn't afraid of nobody. I don't care who he is. You know, I was never afraid. Just like you had guys who was never afraid, but I was never afraid. I don't care who he is. So Kelsey Lundy, Scrooge, he was in prison for shooting James Charles. Chucky, who was one of the leaders of the Border Boys, also. And he came when he saw me in the prison yard, because he was plotting too, but then he knew me as Arch right with me. So he jumped up and he said, no, not on my watch. He said, none of y'all playing with Scoochie. He said, if anyone played Scoochie, you got to deal with me. And then France come, and France stand up with him. And then that was guidance, because they run the prison. And then the whole crew gone from surrounding me to being with me and Kelsey and our France. And I want to say to those guys, I appreciate that. You guys looked out for me, you know, even though you was my enemy. And then he also told me to come in the cell. And when I went in Kelsey and France cell, we were able to work with one another and to work the charges out against one another. I was released a few days later. And from then, me and Kelsey are the best of friends. Me and France are the best of friends. I don't see them. I see them on a regular. He passed and always healed me. But we were the best of friends after that. So we were enemies shooting one another, et cetera. And we just became good friends. Up to this day, Kelsey is still my good friend today. Him and France. Even though France crooked. Yeah. So I just wanted to say that, you know, the prison at its current state was not built for rehabilitation. Again, I talk with my friend Samuel Mushi McKinsey. He and I grew up together. At the same age of 13, 14, me and him was dying together. See, I'm telling you, I already knew what the problem was with these gentlemen. Because being a part of it, I had my own health issues and my post-traumatic stress. Because based on all the gunfire I've been in, the stabbings and the shooting incidents, you know, I've been in over 20, 25 different shooting incidents with 25 different individuals. And it could be more. Stabs that count. Fights in the hundreds I've been in. I get more scars on me. You know, I'm only living today because God wants me to be here to talk to the nation. That's the only reason I'm here today, to talk about my experiences and solutions to the country's problem. I'm on board a lot of advisory committees over the years. I've been with 2018, the advisory committee for local government. I'm on the advisory committee now with the Ministry of National Security under the tutelage of the Minister Wayne Munro, David Allen, Kiva Bedell, and et cetera. I'm also working on the prerogative board of Mercy with former Commissioner of Police Paul Farquharson on possession of small marijuana application forms. He's working through me to get those who needs to get their police record clean for small possession of marijuana to apply. So if you have a small marijuana possession charge on your police record, or you was locked up around the COVID-19 for the COVID-19 protocol violation, you could apply, and I sure they would approve your application. I'm on the advisory committee from the Urban Renewal Board, again. So I'm on a lot of different advisory committees, and all I'm doing is using my same input to talk to the powers to be, to write down these ideas and hope they make them a part of solution, which they are, and many other persons, you know, are listening as the part of being an advisor. You don't get paid for being an advisor, but I have fun because I know I'm helping make change, you know, and that's all it's about, you know, because I know if we'll be released, then we better fix the prison, we better fix the community. And I gave a solution how to fix the communities. And there's other ways to fix the deeper part of the communities, because some of those communities can clear down and you can build mini malls and help people build small businesses on the side of their houses and et cetera. You know, there's a lot can be done, and it's up to the citizen too. And I want to encourage the citizen of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, you know, you live in these communities and there's nothing happening, right? Make something happen. Abandoned houses and yards got to be turning into green space. Make them into coffee or tea or a little ice cream, et cetera. Take your time and just clean up the community. If you clean up the community, you come up with creative ideas. Something work for you. Trust me. Just think. Think about becoming your own business owner. No? Think. Think what could work in your community. You know? Just think. you know? Just think, you know? So I hope everyone understand when I'm talking. You know, I don't want to set Timothy Cole out to be the bad guy, or Eduardo Ferguson, or what you call him, Kofi Goodman, as the bad guys, based on some mistakes that happened in life. But if you study and follow those guys from the age of 13, 14, 15, they would have been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress or mental illness. And then we would have been able to get in their head, but it was not being diagnosed till 30 to 40 years later. And there are many more of them. So, producers are able to take a break. So, I'm Valentino Brown, a.k.a. Scoochie Scrooge or Scroogey. Right back after the break.
Grieve me, but I do in the best I can. Trying to turn my dollar to $100,000. I represent the ghetto people I from.
Not so Bahamas, bigger, but I from Dayton, bro.
Don't take no bathtub, no drive or no joke. If you find fire, you're definitely find smoke.
Dayton, bro. But I from Dayton, bro.
Dayton, I say up and running. Caliban say my shovel don't ever give in. 7 years of farming, watch the crops them coming. Today see a humble thing, the lion sleeping. But they ain't for no reason, reason.
Noise Construction and Development Company Limited hereby notifies all motorists and pedestrians that Celery Drive Road will be closed to the public on December 2nd and December 3rd, 2022, as a result of road paving exercise at the Andre Rogers National Baseball Stadium. Motorists and pedestrians are thereby advised as follows. Proceed nearby area with caution and observe all diversion signs. Comply with instructions from authorities on site to facilitate the flow of traffic in an orderly manner. Be aware of construction works and equipment operating near the area. For any further information, please contact Knowles Construction Office at 603-3150 or 558-2696.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la. I represent the Indian people I from.
Nassau, Bahamas, bigger.
Good night, I'm back on Guided. I know everyone is sitting home and really having a wonderful time, because I tell the stories and I tell the truth, right? And that's all I'm here for, so people could get understanding. And in fact, we're getting some understanding on based on the programs that are being implemented under this current administration. And we're talking about a new maximum security, a new juvenile unit, second chance. They're also going to have BTVI incorporated in the prison. They're going to turn a certain section of the prison into the BTVI. They're saying currently they only could currently train 10 persons, according to Acting Commodore. Acting Commissioner of the prison, Mr. Clare, he's saying now they want to reroute it. They're going to make it bigger, where they're going to be training 300. He said the 10 is just a waste of time. We need to do more. It's too little bit. So now he's saying they're looking to make some space to make 300, to be able to train 300 inmates. Now that's making progress. Okay, when I come back, I'm going to talk with Simon Mushi McKenzie, and then I'm going to end the show. Red Caller, you're on Inside Inner City.
Right,
you're trying on the radio?
Hello.
Hey, good night.
Hey, Scrooge.
Hey, what's up?
Big brother. Baby brother.
Yes, bro.
I older than you, bro.
Okay.
How much people you really think listening to you?
A lot of people listening to me. It don't matter.
I don't believe so.
See? The thing is, you don't
know. No, you're trying to say that. But hold on, this Friday night, right?
No, listen.
Okay.
See some programs, Rachel. when the stuff what I'm talking about reading the newspaper, that's to the people listening, because that's my input that I'm giving to the prison officials and the government. So they're listening.
Okay.
Now you understand where I'm coming from?
I come with you.
Okay. Go ahead.
No. You know, I like Raul.
No, like, that's all right.
I like Raul. People who like Raul.
Yes, no, I'm not a Raul.
No, you know what I'm talking about. Go you ahead. Know, it's just a joke, right?
No, my Spock, it was good.
Well, what I'm saying, though, this Friday night, right?
Yeah.
You know, we live in the capital of the Bahamas, right?
Yes, sir.
Friday night is what night?
Well, it's supposed to be Friday, party number. It ain't a party night in these days. It ain't been party number two and a half years right now.
You know Friday night is party night.
If you have some money, ain't no one out there getting no money right now. The government just trying to get things started. People trying to get their business started. Things are well, just starting to pick
people
up.
People are borrowing money and all the bartenders the money. Let me carry it over till Monday.
Yeah. A lot of people are earning a lot of sense.
You know how we go.
Yeah, a lot of people are earning a lot of sense, you know. A lot of people ain't scorning themselves no more. We listen to people, they budget.
But I'm saying, we talk, you say you like talk truth.
Yeah.
Man, you know anybody want to stay home on a Friday night and there ain't no party going on. But, you know, I really admire your courage and what you're doing and everything like that, but out there, first rules, let me tell you, I ain't even scared to go out. It's like,
I agree.
I know when I gotta walk the streets at night, 2-3 o'clock in the morning down Phillipson Street, living on Madera Street,
mm-hmm.
Walk from Madera Street down to my little gal in Phillipson Street, and then walk back 2 o'clock in the morning. Now, I scared to jump in the car and go out after 5.
Yes.
Because you just might just...
Now, you know what you say? That's why people don't come out now. So you're talking about people going partying. That same word you say right now is what everyone else is saying right now. That's what. Yeah. That's the word, right? I share on the word every day what I hear.
Yeah, you know.
That's the talk on the road right there, what you just said just now.
But we talking truth talk, right?
Yeah, so they scared to go because they could remember when it was back in the day, they could walk and go to the party, but when you go to the party again, shoot up, you go anywhere to have a good time. Yeah, so people say they rather stay home and chill in the back of the yard and smoke some drink or have on the side of the yard. People didn't even want to have parties no more.
I remember when you could walk from Madera Street down to the banana boat by Caterpillar in Oak Seas,
mm-hmm.
1-3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
I then stop the keys and thing on the way back. Walking, you know.
Yeah.
You see a little girlfriend or something. Mm-hmm. Then you gotta stop and drop her off. When I say drop her off, you ain't got no car and then y'all walking.
Yeah, so that's when hardly no cars they spot. Yeah, you
sit on the porch with the lady on your little lap and thing like that. Get your little smooch up and thing like that, and then she go inside, then you go home. You can't do them kind of thing no more.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you might be doing that, somebody get mad when Doc Tennant car pull up on the scene, three fellas exit the car, shoot up the porch, carry Smocky and the gal, and nobody know what's going down.
And you want people to go, and you saying people doing this on a Friday? You think people stupid?
People scared to hang out in the day.
Yeah, of course, Smocky, because with the high unemployment, with debt, people stagnant, don't know what to do.
Spotty. Yeah, but the fella is, but the thing is, the fella, I unemployed, you unemployed.
Uh-huh.
So you find one gone. So you coming on my porch, I sitting on the porch, I ain't got no job. But you coming on my porch to rob me, and I ain't got no money.
Well, it's like this.
And then you gonna shoot me. You shoot me for, I ain't got no money, bro.
That's it. If the guy check in, he ain't getting money, he can shoot you. If he check in, he get money, he still will shoot you.
But why they don't go shoot the people who got all the money?
You know why? Listen why. Because you could prey on your closest avenue, and your avenue is an inner city community. Prey on your brothers and sisters who ain't getting nothing.
But, you know, I'd wait for Friday night. Cause
see, you wait.
It's so scary in this little town.
Yeah, I know that.
You know what scare me?
Yeah.
This little town, only 21 by 7 miles.
This is a conflict zone, see? That's why I'm doing what I'm doing and speaking out. You understand? This is a conflict zone. The Bahamas is a conflict zone, 21 by 7. Not against the tourists. Not against our 4 million. Not against our 5 million. Not against our 6 million or 7 million guests. It's a conflict zone for the Bahamas.
But before I go, I want you to think on this.
Go ahead, Spotty.
How could a foreign entity open up 37 shanty towns? 37 shanty towns.
37.
In a little island, 21 by 7.
Okay, I
got and
that.
Nobody for years could do nothing about it.
I got an answer when you go.
So what I'm saying is, Scrooge, I don't hate nobody. I don't have nothing against nobody. But how could you come in my country and do that over and repeatedly, and nobody in my country could stop it?
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, I get you. I can comment right now. Okay.
All right.
Okay, first of all, Sparky, let me just tell you something. I'm going to say this again. There's an injunction in Abaco on Iran to come with a bomb as well. The government cannot demolish no house. Also, for those to not build. So it's a standstill. But we have seen an increase in the last 3-4 months of extended construction, defying the injunction. That means the powers to be are saying to the government, the hell with y'all. Well, we saw Lincoln being the other day, and he went out there to fight for the Beeman Crown Line. He agitated the government, and they say you got to be gone in 3 to 4 weeks. People who've been there for 20, 25 years, and they were Beemans, because people were going there cutting down the pine trees and deforesting the forest and polluting the water table and making a lot of money with the coal. At the same time, dirtying the place right up with trash and abandoned cars and et cetera. Right? Like I said, he's probably a little too aggressive. You know, you got to know how to negotiate, but he's his own man. And, you know, he upset the government when you listen to the minister, Mr. Juan Miller. He stated that it's the Bahamas government crown land. So that means it's not the Bahamian people crown land, it's the Bahamas government crown land. And then we saw the Minister of National Security, the Honorable Leon Monroe, states that he was the one who gave the 3 to 4 weeks, and he stated that this is the Bahamas Crown Land. So the Bahamians don't own the Crown Land. It's the government of the Bahamas, whether it's the PLP or FNM, that owns the Crown Land, because the Prime Minister of the country is the one who controls the Crown Land, decides who he's going to give the Crown Land to. So that is Crown Land or private land in Abaco. So the same force that the Royal Bahamas Defense Force and the Royal Bahamas Police Force and the Minister of National Security, the Honorable Vian Monroe, did with Lincoln being in the screw and Bahamians down there to vacate, and they put military force of the Defense Force, which is to carry out the orders of the Bahamas government under the Minister of National Security, the Honorable Vian Monroe. And they did that, and I guess there's no more people in that part of the Michael Road or on government crown land. For the issue in Abaco, in the shanty towns around Andres and et cetera, those restrictions need to be followed. Reason why, it goes to voting. We have a lot of Bahamians who have Haitian descent, who have voters card. If you listen to speeches by members of that community, 3-4 years ago, I think 2-3 years ago, about a year before the general election, the interview, you would see where saying certain Haitian Bahamians to vote PLP. So that's what it is, and no one really wants to touch on the matter, but we have to deploy our Defense Force officers, you know, instead of just waiting in Coral Harbor. Why let's make deployment, you know, recruit, what Sir Lyndon said, you know, about that program, recruit about 1,000 cadet Defense Force officers, train them for about 6 months to a year. They'd still be going for training for a year, 6 months. 6 months they could be deployed because they're undermined. Make sure they're paid properly, and make sure that the Royal Bahamas Defense Force officers are paid properly. Give them an increase. Also, like I say, deploy them about captain two, three trained officers, veteran officers with all their equipment. deploy, I think we should deploy at least in Abaco, that stays deployed in Abaco. I'd say anywhere between 150 to 200 defense force officers, along with 50 police officers, along with senior officers, and along with, I'd say, like I said, four or five senior defense force officers. And their job is just patrol Abaco where complaints are being made, where construction is being made. We have a magistrate that doesn't need to be flown in, stays there permanently. We do the same thing to Andres, where there's shanty towns, and we have a constant presence in those communities. The main start, defense force officers and immigration officers, along with immigration officers, to be deployed. Immigration officers also should be have guns, and it should be a routine check on these shanty towns. Continuous. Defense officers are trained. You know, they're different from police. They're trained in survival skills and living in the country. Well, until we could build small complexes in Andres to accommodate officers there. We build dorms in Abaco and Ragged Island, and we have officers deployed instead of them staying in Coral Harbor Base, and we put one of those ships, those $200 million ships, in position to stay there. It saves fuel. We have the manpower. We get the judge there to deal with the illegal immigrants the minute they get catch. If they don't want paperwork, we ship them right back, you know. Okay, we're going to take this last call, and then I'll talk with my friend Mujay. Go ahead, caller. You're on Inside Inner City.
Hello.
Hello. Go ahead.
Hey, Scoochie, what's up, man?
Everything good?
That's exactly my thought, exactly what you were just saying, but I would use more military terms in that each of those major family islands, what the government to do instead of taking all kind of money, talking about $60 million for stadium and stuff.
Yes.
Also $30 million, they need to put small barracks on each major
family island.
You see, that can house defense force,
police,
immigration, police, customs if they need it, all of that.
Yes.
All barracks.
Yes.
And what did you call it? You call it a tour of duty. The same thing that they do in the United States of America. When I was in the Air Force, all of the places that we had bases, they send you there. They send you to Cat Island, send you to Abaco for a year or two, or Lutra for a year. You call it a tour of duty. That way the officers are well-rounded in one area. You can do the same thing for the hospital. You understand? Send them on a tour of duty, a 5-year tour of duty around the family island. So when something happens, they're already there.
Yes.
You ain't got to every day when an accident or something go down. You got to, we got to fly the police
Yes.
They done there.
Yes.
You understand? And the same thing I was saying today on another show, in terms of those dialysis machines.
Mm.
I don't know why at least all of those major family islands don't have at least one dialysis machine on them. Because after the patients then get settled in the Nassau, they can relieve the congestion at TMH and the outstation and send those patients back to the island where they born, grow, and where they're comfortable. Because a lot of them dying from stress alone being in Nassau.
And that's mental illness. And that's mental illness.
Exactly. Scoochie, I know some of those dialysis patients from the island, especially Idutra.
Yes, sir.
They used to try to go home every weekend. And, you know, that's kind of tough.
Not expensive.
Dialysis three times a week, right? That's kind of tough.
Wow.
I know at least two or three that got tired and I saw and coming, and they went back home to die.
Wow.
They actually gone home and never returned. They died home.
Sad.
You know, and we need to do better in this country when it comes to covering this country.
Yes, sir.
Because you have some family island nurses that did their course in Nassau.
Yes, sir.
And even them would like to return home to their island where they're from
so
to take care of their
people. Okay.
You understand? I agree with you. And people like nurses and police officers in them.
Yes. Stationary, yes.
And then, I think.
Yes.
Thanks for taking my call.
Man, it's my pleasure because you guys are so wonderful, you know. It shows me that I'm on the right track when you guys call in and verify, you know, the solution. Because, you know, like I said, it's not about being right or about piggyback on points. No, it's about carrying the country forward with productive solutions and make sense. Now, tell me this stuff we can talk about makes sense today. Huh? The gentleman just stated that the dialysis, people of dialysis, they travel from the family island and they, you know, can't make it. Get turned back, you know, bad weather and just go back home and die. You think it's right now for someone to leave Andres or Abaco or Inagua to come way to the Bahamas to use a dialysis machine? Each of the countries that are populated, you know, we get $1 billion investment. We got to make each family island that has a population that we feel in proximity with their Airbus, with their dialysis machine, with the clinic, you know, with their own police, defense force officers. So that if a hurricane was to happen, we don't have officers in that vicinity, you know, to be able to converge on Abaco. So we don't, what do you call, with defense force officers and police on quick response. We had a ship and helicopter and manpower. And then you would have technology to be calling NASA and to communicate to the other family islands where our next box is set up. You know, and communicate and be able to bring assistance. Instead of assistance taking 7-8 hours, assistance could be within an hour. You know, and we have to think of the box. We need ambulance on the family islands. You know, I see that today when the guy, the German tourist, and we should be embarrassed for that. And the gentleman, I'm glad you talked about that. And I want to say to the German family that lost the life of the German in Andres, you know, by one nincompoop behemoth who was just liking people tense, you know, and made a big mistake on us, damaged himself, not the Bahamas, you know. And we saw on the news where they put the deceased body on the back of a truck, you know, on the family island. Andres, being serious, these MPs who are in Andres, they need to start to speak up. I mean, they might have them, but each settlement or closest settlement needs to have one in vicinity. You know, you can't have just one ambulance for the family island. The settlement's long, so you have the stationary stops where you have the ambulance and et cetera, you know. So, yes, you need your clinic, you need your defense force officers, you need your nurses who want to go back and serve, you know, and we need technology to be able to have a dialogue in Andres on a screen, you know, like the Zoom. You know, if there's an incident, surgery needs to happen, they could do a surgery there, and they could go on the screen, wide Zoom, and they could talk to the doctor in Nassau and get information, et cetera, and et cetera. And then if they need transfer, we could have an Airbus. So we need to invest in the family islands, you know, especially where there's a large population. I'm going to take this last caller. Go ahead, caller. Caller, you got to make it real quick, please. When you get about a minute, please. Go ahead, caller.
Hello.
Go ahead, caller.
Scrooge, really sorry to call you about this, Sparky.
Hey, make it real quick.
Think about this. From you was growing up, I was growing up. Every leader in this country told us that they was our servant, right?
Yes, sir.
Clinton, Ingram, Christie, Menace, Brave, they said they are our servant. Whenever they get sick, where do they go? If it's a rush thing, they rush them to Lifeman Key Hospital.
Yes, sir.
Or they rush them to Doctor's Hospital.
Yes, sir.
Or they rush them off to some hospital in the United States in a hurry.
Yes, sir.
You and I get sick. Where do they rush us?
We mean rush us.
Can we afford? Can you?
I got to go to Princess Margaret also automatically.
Do you have any money to go to the doctor's hospital?
No, sir. We all know that.
I used to go to doctor's hospital when I had insurance.
Yeah.
Because I just showed insurance card. That was paid for.
That's yes.
If I go there now that I retired now and don't have insurance, the man asked me but $800 right just to register.
Yes. There.
Just to register to get in the doctors.
Yes. And that's why
I ain't got it. They gotta go to the PMH.
Yes, sir.
If I go to PMH, then I gotta sit outside on one bench.
All right, Sparky.
Hello?
Yes, sir, you're right. For hours, and probably if you get put in the emergency, you'd be looking at the light up in the roof for about 2 days because they have no bed in the hospital. Thank you very much. Yeah, my that's what has happened. You go to the emergency and then they don't have no bed, so they put you inside this. We heard it on the news. We saw the rain when the hospital was leaking. We saw our grandmothers, you know, not my grandmother, but our grandmothers, you know, Father Zingazan and the bombers. Everyone's grandmothers and my grandmother. You know, because if I go in the hospital and I see a grandmother and she needs help and she don't have a family member, I would go and help her. That's just me. If I see a grandmother or all the poison anywhere in the streets walking and I'm there, I always help. I have respect for my elders, you know? I have respect for my elders. And yes, we need to upgrade the hospital. Also, the government is building a new hospital and et cetera. And like I said, the MPs of these family islands, they need to get together and the residents of the community need to care. A petition to the respected MP and ask them for an ambulance. Ask them for a dialysis machine. See, when you don't like one another, see, we be our biggest enemy. You don't like me, I don't like you. That's why we can't get nowhere. You trying to tell me 10 or 20 people who probably come up with a great idea, say, let's go to the MP. We need an ambulance. We need a dialysis machine. Let's make our recommendation to the MP for this community. And let them speak on our behalf. And let them take it to Parliament and ask for these things. Asking shall be forgiven, but people, you have to get together. Get rid of this black crowd syndrome, but you don't like this one, you don't like that one, and I ain't gonna talk to them and I ain't gonna work with them. That's why no one getting nowhere. You don't have to like me to work with me. Understand that this is a goal. You know, and if we use this goal, we could become a better place. Okay? I got a message here saying, good night, Mr. Brown. Can you repeat the thing? Currently, producer know my number, so let's talk. You can't change the fox and tell the mind and heart is changed to God's way. Jesus, joy, you're just seeking money. Know that. Yeah, he's trying to say if you don't change your heart, you're just seeking money. Yeah. I'm glad I was one of those never seeking money, because if I was seeking money, I'd have been rich a very long time ago, because a lot of ideas and stuff like that I could get paid for as a paid consultant, I turned down. I think I was supposed to be a millionaire, and I turned down thousands and thousands of dollars because I wanted to be neutral, to be able to speak on behalf of the Bahamian people for the things that are invisible, but I bring to light and speak with authority and truth and justice. And the only thing I want is to see the betterment of this country, okay? I want to see the betterment. I want to see the better for the prisoners to come back in prison. I want to see the community thriving, you know. I don't want to see people be crying over their loved ones. You know, I want to see the rate get dropped to 50 prisoners in prison. I want to see the murder count get down to about 20 or to 10 if we could. I want to see job employment go down to zero because we have the capacity to bring unemployment down based on the maritime, based on the tourism industry, and based on the hotel. And based on our trajectory surrounded by sea. All right? Last thing I want to talk about is Simon Mushi McKenzie. Me and Simon Mushi McKenzie grew up. He was my neighbor. He went to T. Gibson. I went to T.A. Thompson. We went to D.W. Davis in 1986. Samuel McKenzie dropped out in about the 8th, 9th grade. Went to prison. Went to Boys Industrial at a very young age, about 14. In between, started to do little small crimes. And this is one of my best friends. And this is one of the nicest person you could ever probably meet. But other than that, you know, like I said, he himself had a mental issue, but it was never diagnosed. Check his story, he's charged with murder. Spent 2 years, come out 6 months, go back to jail for the next 2-3 murders, win the cases, come back out the next 2 years, back again, next 2-3 murders, or whatever, charge with some he ain't do, some he do, or some involved with, and like a period of about 20 to 30 year period where he was before the courts and was sentenced once for armed robbery possession and possession of drugs, but never for murder or attempted murder. But he was just remanded straight through. So all those time he never looked and say something is wrong. Why does guy keep on coming back? And every time he comes back, it's for high prolific crime. Why? What is the problem? And I like to tell you, check his child, check the community. Drug era, single parent, living in the community that's drug infested. No programs,
the system against you. You know, the police job is only lock you up. The court system is just bring you guilty, all right? And society would scorn you. And the prison wasn't for reform. So now we're trying to reform now. We're going to take this last call. Come here, we can take this last call. Caller, you got to make it real quick. They left? Oh, they left. Yeah, so that's what I'm talking about. So I mean no ill will against my friend Eduardo Ferguson, Kofi Gittman, or my friend Timothy Cole. I just was using them as an example because there's so many patterns to follow. If we follow the pattern, you notice we have many young men who come out of prison getting killed. You know why? Because they are high risk. They're the same young set who from 13 gets into juvenile detention, then evolve and become boy. You understand? So there's a revolving door, and they come back on the streets. And the streets don't have nothing to offer for them. Either they're going to get killed, they're going to rob somebody, go back to jail, or someone's going to kill them for killing someone's family member. And they just can't fit. And then many of them lose their minds. You know, to be a top gangster, go to prison, come back out, and then no one respect you no more. You just lose, like you wasn't nothing. So you lose your mind because you have no purpose. All around I've been seeing it. You know, so if you don't have no purpose in life, I want to say this to all the young guys out there who are involved in crime. You're selling your little weed and et cetera, or you're out there as a hitman or a gangster. 30 years from now, imagine this. You have no house, no car, no money in the bank, no roof over your head, and you can't pay rent. And you're sleeping in an old car. You think that make any sense? This is what happened to many guys out there. I've seen it. That's why I'm trying so hard to have a purpose, to build my restaurant, to have some revenue. So think about that. If you get old, they ain't a top gangster, a top drug dealer, they ain't invest your money. Just say you sell a little bit of marijuana because you want no choice. You can't get no job, you come out of jail, right? So you're going to sell marijuana. You can't say I want to sell marijuana for 10, 20 years. Say you put one 5, 6 years in it, make some money and invest in one convenience store and change your life around. You know, don't continue. You know, that's what most guys do who come out of prison. Most guys come to prison who can't find a way, they go and sell a little half a bag and sell their drugs. But they get confused from being a person who gangster. And being a gangster and selling drugs can't work. You're supposed to be able to work a smooth operation where the police is not involved. Where the police can say, you know what? The guy ain't got no problem through his community. You know, gunshots, no one breaking into one house. You know, there's no complaint. So the police just say this. Let me go hail him every 3 months just to see if we can catch him off guard. But we know he's doing something, but he ain't causing too much problem. But if gunshots, shooting and people getting shooting murder on your accord because of your friends, you bring heat to yourself, and when the police come to your spot, they bust you with a gun, they bust you with drugs, and then you have to go to the next area, and then that's where you get killed because you're out of your neighborhood. You understand? So I'm going to explain what most guys do when they come out of prison and can't find a way, and they go in these communities. And some of them are monsters. And I explain to you what I mean by monsters. From 13, they're uncontrollable. They go to first offending. First offending can't deal with them. They graduate and go to big jail. Then you see them before the court for serious crimes. And when, if they're not uncontrollable in the boys' industrial prison, how do you think they're going to be in the system? They get hardened. And that's how Moshe get hardened. That's how I get hardened. But I was able to get myself out because I wanted better for myself. Okay? I wanted better for myself. I know I had better than you. I didn't want to get old and don't have a roof over my head, don't have no money over the bank, and I can't do nothing for my children. I only have one. But I'm saying, you have to be a man or a woman, can't do nothing for his children. They walking around the road and you was their daddy and they coming to you looking for assistance. You can't give them a dime, but you was this big time drug dealer or you was a big time killer. You was a piece of crap. That's what you was. But let's go wide the opportunity is. Young Guy in Radio 96.9. I'm your host, Valentino O'Brien, aka Scoochie Scrooge or Scroogey. And I hope you enjoy. And see you next week on Guy in Radio 96.9 FM.
I represent Bahamian people. I from Nassau, Bahamas, Bigger Bean Town, bro.